Reggie, we might have just experienced the best bowl season a Michigan fan could ever experience. And you know what? It's not over yet.
Michigan's got one more. Ohio State season is over. This is the game. Andy, Michigan has one more game. What are your plans?
Well, I mean, I guess the plans work into sort of the technical notes we have for this podcast. So you and I, as I demanded on our last podcast, if Michigan won their bowl, I was going to pull you in for a pre-national championship podcast because I just need to savor these moments. And as life would have it, we are unable to meet physically, which is normally how we've podcasted over the last 3 years. And we had to revert to pandemic mode with each of us podcasting from our respective houses. So there might be a little bit of audio quality loss or a little bit of technical difficulties, but I'm sure that's not why whomever listens to this podcast tunes in or doesn't tune in for that matter.
We'll
But
wing
in
it.
2 days, I am flying to sunny Houston to watch the Wolverines play to complete potentially the best Michigan football season of all time.
It absolutely would be. I know that the 1900s, early 1900s were great seasons, but come on, sports, athletes, nothing is the same. I know you can't compare eras, but I think it's pretty safe to compare the 2020s to the 1900s. This Michigan team would destroy that Michigan team and every other team that played during those days.
Absolutely. And how many games did they play back in those seasons? Like eight?
I think Michigan still played 10 games sometimes, but I don't know who they played. I mean, Case Western Reserve hasn't had a decent football team in quite a while.
Somebody listed all the schools that some of the big Power Five, now Power Five schools played when they were giving Michigan a little bit of crap for playing the University of Chicago or whoever, like, in, you know, really teams that don't even exist. And there were like Ohio State played like a dental school or something back in the early 1900s. There were some ridiculous matchups that just seem otherworldly now, just to compare the level of competition now to what it was back when it started, which was very amateurish. It was something that, you know, students did on the side, and it doesn't have any level of the panache or popularity or competition that it does today. And they didn't play 15 games. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ohio State hasn't gone 15-0, have they yet?
No, because when we played and won the national championship in 2014, we lost a game. So we were 14-1 that year. We were
Oh, man.
14-0 in 2002, but we didn't, like I said, we didn't play 15 games. So it's only been the last couple of years. Georgia's gone 15-0, but
Yeah, that's Georgia.
that's Georgia.
I'm not even comparing myself to 2021 Georgia that spanked us. And let's be honest, I mean, probably would have beaten this year's Michigan team. And maybe 2022 Georgia probably would have beaten this year's Michigan team. But it's not 2021 or 2022. And
Nope.
Michigan has beat the teams that have been in front of them, including Alabama, who, despite Michigan being a, you know, 2 point favorite, 1.5 point favorite the entire time, you could not find a media personality who picked Michigan to win. You could not find an SEC coach, you know, in those anonymous interviews that thought Michigan was going to come out victorious. It was almost a foregone conclusion that, oh yeah, Nick Saban with a month to prepare, like, oh, Michigan's going to get exposed.
Well, nobody would have ever in their right mind predicted Jim Harbaugh could outcoach Nick Saban on any day. But you know who did predict that accurately? We did. we both picked Michigan versus UW in the championship on our last podcast. So we know as much as any pundit I've seen on ESPN.
Where are my millions of dollars?
Yeah. Well, we've talked about that over the years. I'm sorry. You look at some of these hot takes from some of these people and why we're not getting paid millions of dollars to do this, Andy, I'll never know.
Well, it's like the old George Costanza bit when he's trying to figure out what he's going to do for his next job after he gets fired. And he's like, I could be a color commentator. Or you've heard me say clever things before during games. And
right.
Barry's like, yeah, but they usually reserve that for media personalities and people, you know, in sports. And I think that's where our credentials fall a little bit short.
Our credentials fall short, but it just goes to show, I'm not sure you really need many credentials other than being able to probably speak more cleanly and articulate a little better than we're able to. There's a fair amount of editing that goes into this podcast. Other than that, I don't think that Stephen A. Hot Takes or Paul Feinbaum or anybody else are any more informed than ours.
So two things. One, I'm sure there's a very fine amount of editing that goes into all of those shows as well, even the live ones. And that is their profession. That is what they get paid for. You and I work like dogs, you know, in our profession just for the opportunity to get together. And when only the stars align, when your family life is perfect and nothing springs up and we have time to get together. And even this, for the podcast that I was most excited about doing due to the circumstances of both our team's performance, it almost didn't happen because I had to stay home. My wife had to run to the hospital, you know, to do some medical stuff. And now we got it together on Zoom just to make it happen. So the difference is that our profession is not broadcasting. Our profession is anything but, and this is what we do as a hobby. I would want to know what Stephen A. Smith's hobby is and Paul Feinbaum's hobby is when the day is over and he doesn't have to talk about college football. What does he do? And I bet you he does not do it as well as we do this podcast.
I would agree. I do not think either of them should be in the emergency room anytime soon as physician.
Or show me your wood carving skills or your whittling skills, or show me that
absolutely
that hot rod in the garage you're building. I bet it sucks. I bet they're so just wrapped up in the one thing that they are considered to be so good at that's all they're good at, and the rest of it they're just laying up.
Exactly. And are they really that good at it? We could debate that, but we'll move on. So let's break these games down, I guess, in the order in which they were played. So we'll get the least important game out of the way first, which was the Cotton Bowl.
It was important in my heart.
It was important in mine, too, which didn't do it any favors because that was painful to watch. Just painful to watch. So half of it was painful to watch. Ohio State's defense showed up. So all I heard leading up to the bowl prep, and this is where I'm going to stop listening to every podcast and every pundit, because all I heard was Ohio State's taking it seriously. They're stoked for the game. Now, that may have been true. And to be fair, I have a little different perspective today than I did the day of the game. I have never seen our offense look that bad. I don't think ever.
No.
But our defense played really well. They held Missouri to their season low point total, 14 points, even though they gave up a couple long drives late in the game, which is disappointing. I don't know if they got worn down or Missouri just started to figure some things out. It seemed like after they scored the one touchdown, Ohio State was probably never going to have a chance. But looking back, Devin Brown goes out early in the game. Actually, here was my beef with the game. He didn't go out early in the game. He got hurt early in the game, but they left him in for a couple of drives on one foot and did things like direct snap to Travion Henderson, who faked a pitch to Devin Brown. Who did they think that was going to fool? Some of the play calling drove me insane, Andy. I was like, who do you think you're fooling by pitching to the one-legged man instead of just running? And of course, we started every possession, it seemed like, inside our 10. Why? Because our special teams are the most abominable thing I've seen in football in decades.
We'll get to the Michigan game special teams because
still not as bad.
I am with the outcome. We gave Ohio State special teams a run for their money.
They tried. You definitely tried, but still, to fair catch ball after ball at the five, like, that's been a rule forever. Don't fair catch inside the 10. Maybe you get a little more field position. And then the one time they managed to fair catch the ball at the 25, they had a block in the back on a fair catch. I mean, missed a field goal. The only thing good about special teams was our punter had the best game of his career. He was booming him and flipping the field just in time to hit the transfer portal. As a three-year starter, it makes no sense to me. You're going to go where? Like somebody mentioned on one of the boards, where's he going to go? Iowa, like a punter's dream.
that is by far the most inexplicable transfer of definitely the transfer portal season, but maybe of all time in the transfer portal era. I have to dig deep for an explanation, and it gets really weird. He was run off by internet trolls because the toxic fan base was too much. He was going to play for the Ohio State University next year. Where do you go? Where do you go from that? Like, it's not like he's going to have to battle for the job.
That's what I don't get. It's not like Kyle McCord, who maybe would have had to have won a competition again in the spring or the fall. He's the punter. He's been the punter for 3 years. I don't get it. Maybe he thinks the offense will be better and he won't be punting much next year. I don't understand the logic. And he had a great game.
Maybe he's just going to go to a punt-heavy school. You're right. Maybe Iowa's his destination.
Well, our offense gave Iowa a run for its money, although we did score. So Iowa hasn't scored in either of its last two games. They lost to Tennessee worse than they lost to Michigan, 35-0. But who cares about Iowa? Ohio State, so the defense, here's the good news. The defense played really well. Jack Sawyer was a monster. He had a beast of a game. By all accounts, supposedly, he'll be coming back. We already got news that Tyleek Williams is coming back. That defense is going to be loaded next year if we get as many of those guys back as we are hoping. The offense, I don't know what the deal was. Supposedly, Carson Hinsman got suspended, or there was some fabricated reason he wasn't in there. So you mix up your O-line for the bowl matchup, and they were not up to the task.
We change the fundamental structure of the offensive line that we have run with for the entire season because, go to coaches, our center got a case of the yips.
The yips.
Yeah, no.
Like Alabama center.
That's it. Well, he is. Wow, man. That was great. But, yes, like Alabama center. Maybe it was a brilliant move. But, like, that dog don't hunt, man. That is coach speak. I know you have to say it. I know there's times you can't divulge the real reason you're suspending a player, but Hinsman was suspended. That is as clear as the day is long. He was suspended for something, who knows what, and I forget. I heard some rumors and, you know, like he wasn't going to practice or he was criticizing somebody, but
he gave an interview on a podcast supposedly and talked about how Ohio State's NIL was lacking and how the practices had been kind of lackluster, and apparently what he said didn't hit home well with the coaching staff.
And yet it rings maybe a little bit true that they weren't taking this seriously. I mean,
I don't know. The defense did, and I think Devin Brown did. I feel so bad for Devin Brown.
This is the most forgiving take from an Ohio State fan that I've heard in the last 2 weeks. And I've heard them all, man. He's like, okay, I'm going to focus on the defense. The defense was a strong thing.
No, the offense was the worst. I already said this, the worst offensive showing I can remember. You have to go back at least, as my son pointed out, to 2016 Clemson, 31-0 in the playoff. But at least you can say that was two and the eventual national champion.
Yeah, that was Clemson, man. Yeah.
I think Missouri's a good team. I think Ohio State should have been able to handle them. I think Ryan Day got out coached. And for the first time, I've been a pretty big Day supporter and apologist, I guess. You can't argue with the overall numbers. But now when you start to look at, year in, year out, recruiting top five talent, and you're not beating other top five teams. I watched UW, and we'll get into UW more later, but they spread the field. I've never understood why Ohio State, with all their wide receivers, why don't they run four wide receivers out there, four at a time, and develop a quick passing game? If you know your O-line is not playing well, yet there was no attempt whatsoever to adjust by rolling the pocket out or doing something, or running. They ran one, tried to run one trick play reverse, and Igbuka tossed a ball that, you know, he's not a quarterback. Brandon Ennis has played quarterback before, so you don't even let your wide receiver that has some experience as a quarterback throw that ball. You let Ibuka throw it. It looked like there was no preparation whatsoever. What do we do if their D-line is dominating us and the way they blitzed us? No quick passes, no screen passes, no, just nothing. The most vanilla, uncreative offense and game plan that I have seen. I was shocked. So yeah, the defense was great. Can't wait to see next year's defense, the offense. We'll see. We just got Will Howard in the transfer portal. What that means for Devin Brown and Keen Holtz and that room next year, I have no idea. We'll get into that, I guess, at the year-end podcast.
I've said it before, and I will say it again after every time I witness this, but I think Ohio State has a game plan, and they don't do well with adjustments. We're going to beat you how we think we should beat you. And if that doesn't work, if they just keep running their head into the wall until the game's over. I mean, the lack of adjustments to, hey, this isn't working, or, you know, we don't have Devin Brown in, or the O-line's crumbling. Just like you said, there's quick passes, there's dump offs, there's, you know, spread it out. But it looked like once it didn't work for the offense, it wasn't going to work for the rest of the game.
It was awful, and there's really even no point beating that horse anymore. We'll get on to the truly exciting, most exciting day of football I can remember in quite some time, which was New Year's Day. Both games down to the wire, both games thrilling, one game with a good outcome, one game with a horrible outcome, even though it's hard to root for Bama too, especially after the Big Ten got trounced by the SEC in every bowl game. Like you mentioned to me by text, like, it is a dilemma for conference pride. Can I root for Michigan to win? The answer was clearly no. I was rooting against them at every turn. When JJ throws what looked like a pick on the opening play, I thought, good, playoff JJ showed up. And then I should have known that was a harbinger of things to come, because the luck definitely bounced Michigan's way.
It's so weird, because if you said one team is going to be the clearly better team from a coached up standpoint and from a ready to play standpoint, and that team is also going to make a litany of grievous mistakes that could cost any one of them, could cost a team the game, I'd be like, oh, well, clearly you're discussing Alabama, so maybe we have a chance to beat them this year. But no, Michigan was the better team. The looked like the more talented team, definitely looked like the better coach team, that if it wasn't for over and over and over trying desperately to shoot themselves in the foot, would have won that game by 20 points.
Or could have lost by 10. If come on, man, Bama did plenty of shooting themselves in the foot, at least as much. And all the lucky bounces pretty much went Michigan's way.
Well, I like Bama. Bama just didn't. I don't think they. Once again, I don't think they game plan for Michigan. I texted this to you after the game. I want to point out three specific situations where, as we have said many times in the past, that football is a game of inches. So first quarter, first play of the game. You mentioned it. JJ rolls out, and I don't know to this day, I don't know if he was trying to hit Cornelius Johnson or just throw it away, but he throws the ball to the Alabama defender, which looks like an unoverturnable pick. Like, I buried my face in my hand. I got super quiet. My wife worried about my overall mental health the rest of the game. And then they called it. The player needed to reestablish himself. And Reggie, the replay was not even an inch. It was, his heel was half an inch crossing into the line, to the point where I was worried they were going to say you know, the ruling on the field stands, not as confirmed. Because, and until I saw that one angle of the camera where he clearly had his heel on the line, I don't think they would have had the data to overturn that.
They got the call right. It was definitely the correct call. His heel was out of bounds, but it's still an awfully lucky break to start the game for Michigan.
Super lucky break. Okay, so that's one. Number two, let's go nearly to the end of the game. Michigan is down by 7. There's 2:10 left in the game, so this is our drive to win it. J.J. McCarthy throws to Roman Wilson for like a 30-yard pass, and the defensive lineman gets his fingers on the ball. And I've never in my lifetime seen a ball do what it did when it is tipped by a defensive lineman, which is nothing at all.
Well, it was a little higher. He had to jump higher.
Yeah, it lifted it like 2 inches in the air, and it didn't break the spiral. It didn't send it off. I've never seen that happen. Usually when that happens, that's a guaranteed interception, at least an incomplete pass when there's a tip on it like that. And Roman Wilson was in coverage too, man. If you tip that high enough, it's flying over his head, and that's an interception. And the game is over. Final one after the touchdown. I think Alabama goes 3 and out, and there's only 54 seconds left. Punt to Jake Thaw, who is normally money. He's the guy when you just want to catch the ball and gain no yards whatsoever. Not make a play, just catch the ball. He muffs the punt for the first time in the entire season. He muffed the punt, and the ball is inches away from the end zone with Alabama people rushing at him milliseconds away from piling on him for safety, and then the game is over.
Yep.
Any one of those three plays goes the other way, and Alabama probably wins the game.
And there was the missed running into the kicker. There are obviously a lot of missed calls. You and I talked about missed holding penalties, but when you run into the penalty is called running into the kicker. So when you blatantly run into the kicker in front of the ref when the kicker's the only guy there, how do you miss that? I mean, it doesn't mean they were going to score, because you know what? The bottom line in that game was Michigan's defense. We talked about it before. Michigan's defense in the first half, would they have 5 sacks? Alabama could not throw the ball. And they looked like the Alabama team that should have lost to Auburn and should not have been in the playoff because of that loss. But they were. And then the second half, they definitely got it together, and they dominated the entire second half until that last drive, and I think that drive showed the maturation of J.J. McCarthy. Michigan didn't look like they belonged in the playoff the last 2 years, and now they are on the verge of winning it all because he put that early could-have-been interception aside. He played pretty dang good the rest of the game. He was pretty clutch when it mattered.
The moment finally wasn't too big for him. But do you know who the moment was too big for? Samaj Morgan, our freshman, true freshman wide receiver who saw a little bit of field time and got some gadget plays in the season, but wasn't a huge contributor. Let's have him field the kickoff to the most important game of the Harbaugh era. And I get it. You're trying to make a play. But, oh, my gosh, dude. Oh, another moment where my heart just sank. What are you doing playing a – like, it's the Rose Bowl. You should have the most experienced players in there. Mistakes and turnovers cost you the game against a team like Alabama. And – that was another one. When I saw it happen, I'm just like, oh, my gosh, here we go. And I am both a little perplexed and I feel a little positive about Harbaugh keeping Samaj Morgan in. They gave him like a jet sweep play after that. He was targeted a couple times. And I get that you want to let him know that you haven't lost faith in him as a coach for that blunderhead play. But at the same time, gosh, man, just – he's got great years ahead of him at Michigan. Great years. He's clearly talented. He's quick as can be, but I don't know if playing him for the first time fielding kickoffs in the Rose Bowl was a right decision.
He's fast. He's
right decision if he did fine or made a 20-yard play after the catch.
You have to give credit to Michigan and their coaching staff because they always put guys in and get them reps, and they don't show that they've lost confidence in anybody. They keep building it, and they know that with his speed, all it takes is one play sometimes, and that game was tight enough that one big play, one get him in the open field, and he'd be potentially gone or have a huge play. So they gave him a few opportunities at it.
Yeah, I mean, he gave Alabama an opportunity to score a touchdown too, which they converted on. I don't know, like ball game scoreboard, I get yep. it, but oof.
And that last play by Alabama was
man. Don't get me wrong. Play calling, I'll take Michigan's play calling all day long. But I will tell you that I think if the snap wasn't a worm burner ground ball, as they had been all day long for that center, who, by the way, I heard he took an official visit to Ohio State after he
today, I think.
So go to the Buckeyes, buddy.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's about either. Assuming our actual starting center gets out of the doghouse before the 2024 season starts, I think we're okay at center. Hinsman was probably one of the bright spots on the O-line this year. For a redshirt freshman, he played pretty well. O-line is hard to play early on just because of the physical development you need. He'll be okay. Unless this guy can play guard. Now, that's a different thing, because we needed a right guard in that game really badly.
He shouldn't be snapping, because if anyone should have been benched for a case of the yips, it was that guy.
Oh, he definitely cost them for sure a couple of drives.
I mean, I think, like, it's impossible to know, like, is Milroe going to follow his lead blocker, or, is he going to wait for the play to develop? But it looked like he scooped it off of the turf, he panicked, he ran just straight ahead
into with everybody,
and there was just a mass of bodies there. It was like there was no thought whatsoever. And Reggie, that was after like the fourth consecutive timeout. You think they would have schemed up something and been like, okay, you know what Michigan defense is going to think we're going to do? They think we're going to run a QB designed run with Milroe, because that's what we've done the entire game. But what we're actually going to do is, have someone leak out into the flat, have a running back leak out to the flats.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, that's what Michigan did to keep their drive alive when it was fourth and two.
And that play for Michigan kept working and kept working. They ran it, that play that you're talking about, they had run earlier to the other side of the field.
Yeah.
And it worked very, very well. And you got to give, this is where I do give Michigan credit. Look, their play calling has been bold all year, and it seems like it has worked out every single time they've tried it. I can't remember them getting stuffed on fourth down this year. I'm sure it's happened. Maybe they're not perfect on fourth down, but it seems like it. In every big situation, when there was a semi-gutsy call or, at least a bold call, like we're going for it, they seem like they make it every time.
Yeah, I mean, the confidence carries you a long way. I mean, believing in yourselves, believing in your players, that's good for yards, man.
Yeah, well, now Michigan's playing for it all. Who would have thought?
And this isn't a hedge, and I'm certainly not preparing myself for a potential loss witnessed in person by me, the person who only sees his team lose in bowl games in person. But the win against Alabama, the standard bearer for the SEC in the last 20 years, in the Rose Bowl, a place that has haunted Michigan for the last, as long as I've been a fan. I mean, we lost to USC in 2024. I was there. We lost to Vince Young's Texas team in 2004. I was there. We lost to Vince Young's Texas team in 2005. I was there. So this feels, for a Michigan fan, like the final monkey off our back. We beat Ohio State. We vanquished that. We will never beat Ohio State. We'll never win the Big Ten. We won multiple Big Tens. Now we won against an SEC team, which has been historically dominant at the Rose Bowl. I think we go on to win it all. I think we match up well against Washington. But if we don't, this is still maybe not the best season then, but one of the best seasons Michigan's ever had. And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Well, this clearly would be, with a loss, the second best season they've had since 97 when they won half a national championship. So their second best season in 75 years. And like you said, if they win it, this is the greatest season in Michigan football history. No question about it. And
I'll be there, baby.
And let's talk about their opponent, because the second game that day was equally thrilling for some of the wrong reasons, which we'll discuss. But the Huskies, we're all pretty excited about that in this house. And you and I have talked about, we plan to sailgate next year. That game will not be quite as unique and meaningful now either way. One of us, I'm guessing, will be wearing a national champions t-shirt when we sailgate next year in September.
I never even thought about that. Yeah. Yes, one of us will.
One of us will. The Huskies played great against Texas. And I think Texas, I said before the playoff, I thought any of the four teams could win it. They're all four good teams. I do think Alabama was the weakest of the four. I'm curious to see how it goes. Man, the Huskies are dangerous. I'm curious how this matches up. But as far as the Sugar Bowl, though, the Huskies played well. They made enough plays on defense. The end of that game, had you ever seen that rule before? I had never heard of that. I've never seen that. I thought they must have got it wrong, but I actually downloaded the NCAA Football 2023 rules book. And it's right in there. If you have an injury in the last minute of the half, of each half, then the ball will start at the snap. It makes no sense. It's one of the most horrific rules I think I can think of. It's almost as bad as targeting. That rule to penalize an offense, they should have been able to run 35 or at least 25 more seconds off the clock. And that game probably just ends somewhere in Texas's end. The hot takes I read, oh, they should have kneeled three times. No, they shouldn't, because a first down guarantees you victory. And I hate when teams do that. Go to try to win the game. So they ran the ball three times. The guy gets hurt. He's got no reason. He's not feigning injury, which is against the rules. He's got no reason to do it. That rule should be changed immediately before next season. That is ridiculous that they gave Texas that much more time.
It is ridiculous. And to the point where I was texting a mutual friend and colleague of mine that I would see her. I would see her in Houston. And she as soon as that rule rolled out, we both realized that Texas was going to have a real chance of winning this game. She was texting me quite a few expletives that I did the unforgivable sin, which you did once, of calling the game before it's over. I had no idea. I had no idea.
The game Never seen that before.
Effectively over as far as my mind was concerned. I don't know if I put this on the podcast, but I am super worried about Washington. I think Michigan would have matched up better against Texas than we would have against Washington. I think Washington has maybe, don't get too offended, Reggie, the best wide receiving core in the country this year. I mean, clearly no one was better than Marv, but like Odunze is right there, and Jalen McMillan, Polk. I just think they've got a little bit more in the way of options, and we've got strong safeties, and we've got one 5-star corner. But I don't know if, I mean, it's going to be the first time I think that our entire backfield is tested as much as, and they have a quarterback who's a little bit more competent than Kyle McCord. So
I think that's the key. I think, I totally agree with you, Andy. I think Washington is the one wide receiver room that I say stacks up well, at least their top three or four. Yeah, Ohio State's got a seven deep wide receiver room, where we did till they all hit the portal. But now we've got more coming in. We've got receiver is not our weakness, put it that way. No. But Washington has the Joe Moore award-winning offensive line and a sixth-year quarterback or whatever Penix is, who's got a lot of experience,
he can squeeze out.
Who got robbed of a Heisman Trophy. I'm not just saying that as a Husky fan. be, but he was robbed. He should have won the Heisman any other year. I guarantee you, if the roles were reversed and he was an SEC quarterback and the Pac-12 quarterback had thrown up numbers the way Jaden Daniels did, no question he would have won the Heisman.
There's an SEC bias, and then there's a Pac-12 anti-bias, especially if you're not USC. And it's multifactorial. I'm going to say it. I mean, you and I notwithstanding, college football's not as big out here as it is in the Midwest, but definitely down in SEC country, in that the money from advertising fuels the media, which fuels the attention, which fuels the awards. So, yeah. I mean, play for USC, yeah, you're in the national spotlight, but any other team in the Pac-12, like the panache is just not there. And especially if a handful of your games are coming on after half the country is already in bed, like, it's just going to happen. Yes, he was, based on stats and performance alone, he was robbed of the Heisman.
Yeah, so I agree with your take, though, that obviously this is by far the best offense Michigan will face this year. At the same time, it's far from the strongest defense they will face this year. And so that's what I'm curious. Can Michigan's front seven put pressure on Penix the way they did on Milroe? Although Washington, unlike Ohio State, the thing that's so refreshing is they put their four wide receivers out and they have a quick passing game. They actually act like they may have coached them in case there was pressure to do some quick hitters and actually get the ball to some of those guys in space. And Penix just lit Texas up, man. That was fun to watch.
Yeah. He's got all the necessary variables, right? He's experienced. He's got a good offensive line in front of him. He's got weapons at wide receiver. Oh, I mean, what they don't have is they don't have a nearly as strong a defense as some of the teams that we play. But I will say this, if Michigan plays against Washington the way we played against Alabama, we are absolutely losing. The game's not gonna be, 13-13. We're gonna have to win the turnover battle. We're gonna have to score on the majority of our possessions. And I can't believe what sort of twilight zone am I in where I'm about to say this. I don't think Washington, the University of Washington, is going to make nearly the same amount of mistakes that Alabama makes in bowl season.
We'll see. Obviously, you're right. It'll come down to that. Who wins the turnover battle? Tell me who wins that stat. And like most games, that's probably who wins the game. I don't know. Texas ran the ball pretty well on Washington. And if Texas did it, I fear Michigan will be able to run the ball pretty well. They've obviously got the run game. Washington's defense has been very good in spots. Sometimes they play well, and sometimes they just make a big play when they need it. But I worry a little bit about Michigan being able to control the line of scrimmage on offense. I do think Washington's offense, I don't know, how are they going to fare against the number one defense in the country? That was the difference. Their defense shut down Alabama, both in yards and points, pretty well, about as well as you could ever hope to in a playoff game. So if they can slow Washington's offense, now Washington's key to victory, obviously, is to just score, 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 score. They got to score on the majority of their possessions because Michigan will score some points on them. Michigan beat Penn State by, 9? They beat us by 6. They went to overtime against Alabama. And I do think Washington's better than all three of those teams overall. So could Washington win this game? Yeah, sure they can. Like you said, who makes fewer mistakes? Who makes big plays?
Yeah, I mean, of course, Washington's better than all of those teams. Washington's in the national championship. Yep.
There's only two unbeaten teams. It worked out exactly how it should. There are two unbeaten teams. I think we can put to rest the Florida State got robbed. I know it's not the same thing when you have half your team opt out and your quarterback's down, but come on, man, 63-3 is not really an argument you can make in any direction when you lose 63-3 about anything. Florida's attorney general should withdraw their lawsuit.
I think Washington's key to victory is exactly what you said. I mean, you get Michigan more than 7 points behind, and our whole keys to victory go out the window. We can't control the clock anymore. We can't be the boa constrictor that Joel Klatt describes. We have to catch up. We have to make big downfield plays. We can't just rely on chunk runs and, you know, taking our time. And that's when Michigan would get off schedule. But if you let us stay in it and you let us even take a lead, I think it's going to be tough sledding for Washington. So Penix comes out there and balls out and they score a touchdown twice in their first two possessions. It's going to be hard for Michigan.
I totally agree, but I've been waiting for that to happen.
My anxiety as a fan notwithstanding, it was a fantastic and fun game to watch. And watching it knowing the outcome the second time, when I watched it later that night, I really enjoyed the heck out of it. It was a very fun game. And to see it in the Rose Bowl place that Michigan has crapped the bed so many times before, I think really, really inspires me. I'm happy that you have a team to genuinely root for in the national championship, not just because they're playing Michigan, but because they're our local team.
Yeah, no, I love the Huskies. I have my daughter, Jessica, is at the University of Washington. I liked the Huskies before. Why? Because they used to beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl. And I was like, hey, that's okay. And Huskies, Malamutes, whatever, were my favorite dogs. And I love Husky Stadium. It's a great place. I'm excited to go next year. But it's a double-edged sword either way, because the Huskies win the national championship would be exciting under any circumstances. And Michigan loses it, which would also be exciting. But
I know
the reverse can also happen. And not only do the Huskies lose the national championship, they lose it to Michigan.
We both have for someone experiencing the worst Ohio State season in, I don't know, at least 5 years. I don't know when it was that depressing. At least when you guys weren't in the playoffs a couple years ago, you threw down at the Rose Bowl against Utah. For someone who is coming off of such a disappointing Ohio State season, you've got a lot still to go for the national championship game.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled. I'm excited. If Washington had lost that game after Texas got four cracks inside the 15, four, they couldn't even the last play. They had to have 1 second left. I was like, if we lose the game because there was 1 second left, which, by the way, they never reviewed it to see if his knee was down.
The clock had run out. And I'm like, they're gonna challenge this. They're going to stop this. I'm like, the clock, I mean, they at least need to make sure the clock hadn't run out for like the most potentially consequential game of the play.
But also to make sure his knee wasn't down, in which case the clock would have run out because he would have been down. They didn't have any timeouts left. The game would have been over. And if we had lost on the last play with a second left when there shouldn't have been a second left, it literally, my boys and I were watching that. We were dying. It would have been one of the most brutal losses that I could remember. Even I can't even think of, I'm sure Ohio State's lost some brutal games, you know, Penn State in 2016, when you're going to extend your lead and you get a field goal blocked and run back for a touchdown, you end up losing. But this game with the consequences, with the stakes, what they were, obviously the Georgia loss last year was pretty brutal. The Clemson, you know, now that I think about it, never mind. I've seen so much brutality in my sports watching career, Andy.
You've regaled us with the story of the poor cursed Ohio State fan.
It's tough. But that would have been about as brutal, maybe as going back locally to obviously the Seahawks and Russell Wilson throwing a pick on the goal line to end the Super Bowl was pretty brutal. That was a pretty brutal loss. But that the Huskies, if the Huskies had that yanked out of their hands at the last second with that stupid clock rule that needs to be changed.
I can't believe it. My only hope is now Michigan has the chance to hand the Huskies their heart on a silver platter. And that might trump watching them lose to a Texas team that I'm sure you don't love, but you don't hate them either.
I don't like Texas. Why would I have any root for? I mean, yes, well, I would have rooted for Texas against Michigan.
Now you get a chance to watch Michigan win and the Huskies lose at the same time.
Yeah, I still would have preferred, obviously, that the Huskies beat Texas and made it to the championship game. It's an incredible season. One of my fears is that when Harbaugh's gone and under scandal and disgrace next year, that Kalen DeBoer might become their next head coach. That's a nightmare scenario.
The Michigan head coach?
Yeah.
Speak it into reality, man. Let's go.
No, I don't want to see it. Well, who you got? You think Michigan's going to pull it off, win the national championship?
I got to say yes, man. I don't even know what my logical brain would pick, but my lizard brain says I'm going to be there. I'm going to witness it in person. It is going to be either the best sporting moment of my entire life or a devastation that I will spend the next day in the hotel room. And yes, I booked my flight home a day after the game for the purpose of recovering if Michigan loses.
Right.
Lay in bed and like cover myself. But I got to say, it's going to be Michigan. I think it's another close one. You know, I think it's a one possession game. You know, I know the spread's like 4.5. I don't even know if Michigan covers, but Michigan wins one possession. What do you got?
I'm rolling with the Huskies.
Of course you are.
Maybe it's more heart than head. I get it. If Michigan wins the game, I'll have seen it coming. You know what the blueprint is, the same blueprint they've been using all year. But at the same time, Michigan has felt like a team possessed, a team of destiny, if you will. But so is Washington. I'm not sure the intangibles here are to either team's obvious advantage. I think the seasons both teams have had has been incredible. And Washington's won a lot of close games. They've played tough games. They're battle tested. That offense is tough to slow down. But at the same time, I've always believed in the old adage that defense wins championships. Michigan's got the number one defense, and that might make the difference. But I'm still rolling with the Huskies. Go Dogs. I hope they bring home the first championship since 91, which was their only championship. So it would be pretty thrilling. I know, obviously, a lot of Husky fans and have some good friends that will be thrilled beyond belief, and so will my boys and my daughter, who's a Husky herself.
How bad.
And my wife, who also is a Husky, also is an alum of UW, and as was her dad, as is her brother. So go Dogs.
Think of how rough the flight back to Seattle from Houston right. will be for me. Or how joyous it will be, because I'm rocking my Michigan gear either way. I'm not going to be the person who wears the gray hoodie when their team loses, man. I'm ride or die. I'm there. I'm going to be rocking my obnoxious Michigan shirts, my thank you for your service, Connor Stallions t-shirt on the plane, at the tailgate. I'm rocking it all. And if Michigan loses, I'm wearing it back too. And I'm going to take all the slings and arrows all the way back to Seattle.
As you should.
As I should.
This is supposed to be fun. We do this because it's fun. We're way more invested in this than we probably should be. We get it. That's why they're fanatics and not rational observers.
And that's what makes us, I think, as dedicated and as irrational as we are, I think that's what still makes us good fans, is because you have every reason to be completely sour. I mean, Ohio State disappointed in every way possible this year, and there's questions about whether Ryan Day is going to be able to, you know, get the team that he recruits so well over the hump. There's questions about culture rot from the inside. It's a literal cornucopia of treats for me. And we're still getting together talking about the bowl matchup of your arch nemesis to win a national championship and having a good time doing it. And I think that there when the script is flipped and when I have to talk about an Ohio State national championship, I'm sure it will come. I hope that I'm able to do it with such carefree abandonment as you are right now.
Well, don't get me wrong. I don't wish well for any Michigan fan, coach, player. I would love to see Roman Wilson, who loves to talk trash after the game's over. You know, I never hear a peep from him before the game, but he's talks all kind of trash as soon as it's over and post stuff. And I don't care to see JJ McCarthy. If he was that meditative, why are you doing it in the middle of the field where, you know, every camera that's covering the game can watch you? I don't wish anything good for any of them. So don't get me wrong. I'm hoping Michigan loses, as I was against Alabama. But yes, I can keep some measure of perspective of what it means in the big picture. And Andy, because you and a couple other Michigan fans I know, I will be glad. I think you deserve good things. You deserve joy in your life. So from that perspective, like, I get it. I never thought I would see it until 2002. I mean, it had been, you know, I'd been an infant last time Ohio State had won a national championship before the 2002 season, which also took years off my life. We had so many down to the wire games. That team had no offense, but a heck of a defense. Then 2014, first year of the playoff. And so it is literally some of the highlights, you know, the best sports highlights of my life. So I'd be happy for you to experience that, because you were probably a toddler last time Michigan was in a national championship.
I definitely wasn't. I was 15, but I definitely wasn't a Michigan fan. And so this is all new for me. And before it was, Michigan is just relegated to be the rival of a nationally dominant team, and every now and then get to play, you know, in the college football playoff or play for a important bowl and get absolutely smushed. And this feels very different for the first time. And, you know, I started going to Michigan in 2021. So it's been 23 years, and I love my wife for making the sacrifices, both the time and taking care of our boys and the financial sacrifices that it takes to go all the way out to Houston to watch this. But I have to see this in person. So I will report back with all of my feelings, findings, and the results of the game for the next podcast, which will be the postseason podcast, where we find out whether it's the Dogs or the Wolverines who are national champions.
And then the season, sadly, will be at an end. Although not sadly for you, if you win a national championship, then you'll enjoy that. When Ohio State won in 2002, I didn't even care that they lost to Michigan in 2003. I could say it's probably the only time in my life. Not that I didn't care. I was into it. And actually, had they beat Michigan, they would have probably been back in the BCS title game again the next year. But after you win a natty, things don't bother you as much. It just doesn't. Even 2015, which was probably one of the most talented Ohio State teams ever, I wish we'd gotten a shot in the playoff that year, because I think we could have again done some serious damage. If you win this, Andy, you're going to be riding high for a long time, especially coming off three straight Big Ten championships, three straight wins against Ohio State. If Ohio State crushes Michigan next year, you're going to be like, whatever. Congratulations.
This sounds great.
Yeah.
Give me the whatever loss to Ohio State, something I've never experienced in my entire life before. I've never lost to Ohio State and been like, man, you know, you gotta lose one sometimes, guys. Every loss to Ohio State, even the ones where I absolutely knew it was coming, has felt like a heel on my soul, squeezing my heart into a fine paper. So the idea, the words that you're stringing into a sentence sound like different language to me. I hope that Michigan wins for a number of reasons, but you gave me another one to experience a feeling that is so foreign to me.
We'll see if it holds true next year. I hope we'll see if Michigan loses to Ohio State next year. In 2011, even when we had a losing season, I was like, we won 7 years in a row. You cannot expect that to go on forever. Even in 2021, that one still stung because of the stakes. And again, watching the joy of guys like Aiden Hutchinson and some of those players, I didn't like it, but when you hadn't lost to Michigan in a decade, it just isn't quite the same. Now, don't get me wrong, this year, three in a row, three losses with everything on the line. Like, no, I'm back to like 90s level disdain for Michigan.
It's funny, like, it took the third loss for your son to say, now I know what it really feels like to hate Michigan.
Yeah,
for the first and second one didn't do it.
When you're 22 years old and you can remember, you know, you could only remember like two of them, it probably feels different. Whereas I, on the other hand, in my childhood, played plenty of painful losses already to reference.
And I have had those too. So let's join each other on the plateau of champions. And so I can experience and also have the same high-mindedness when we get together as you. Like, I'm not just this pissy, spiteful kid and be like, Ohio State, I hate them so much. We're never going to win. We're never going to be relevant in college football ever again. Give me one national championship year where I can be like, hey man, we made it. Like, you know, it's possible. It'll happen again sometime in the future. Maybe not soon, but it'll happen again. I need this. I need it now more than ever, Reggie.
And you deserve it, but I hope you don't get it.
But, thank you. I'll take that. That's probably about the kindest words I can expect from.
That's about as far as I can go, man. But go Dogs. And
go Blue, yeah.
And yeah, until we meet for our postseason episode, there are no Bucks.
Go Blue.